This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make sure you check out the Elite Eight preview, Tennessee-Purdue, over on VSiN.com. Our buddy Zach Cohen wrote about it. Preview and prediction, what he thinks will happen in this afternoon's game in Detroit. Boilermakers and Volunteers trying to break through that glass ceiling and get to the Final Four for the first time in a long time for both of those programs. Tennessee's never done it. Purdue hasn't been there since 1980. Go ahead and check it out. VSiN.com. You need a VSiN Pro subscription, so VSiN.com/subscribe if you want to get the goods from our buddy Zach Cohen. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and joining us in studio here at the Circa Resort and Casino, host of DK The Sweat, which you can check out Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 10 Eastern Time, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. It's our buddy Julian Edlow. Julian, how we doing, man? Vegas treating you well? I know you've been out here in the sports book. How have the bets been going?
Vegas treating me well. The early wake-up calls, working on East Coast time out west, not treating me as well. But here we are. The bets are going okay, back and forth. Clemson plus 3.5, a little frustrating last night when Alabama shoots 44% from three and you, as one of the better shooting teams in the country, shoot 50% from the free throw line. Alabama, I just saw, was 10 of 15 from three in the second half of that game. That's not going to work.
You know, were you surprised? I mean, they end up shooting, they end up 8 for 26, and Gerard made 5 of the 3s. Nobody else could make a three, and it was just kind of like you expected them to kind of turn the corner. I think everybody at halftime thought Clemson was going to win that game just because they were eventually going to shoot well.
Yeah, that just these outliers in the tournament, like, you know, you bank on things going the way that, you know, they have all season, and it'll regress to the mean, and then, you know, it doesn't. Everybody thought Marquette was going to start hitting some threes against NC State. They didn't. They kept shooting them, but they didn't. And Hall fouls out late. How many front ends of the 1-and-1s did Clemson miss down the stretch? And then Alabama comes right down. Sears hits a deep, tough three. Like it was just that kind of game. Things went Alabama's way for sure.
Hanging out with Julian Edlow here of The Sweat. Make sure you check it out 8 to 10 Eastern time, Saturdays and Sundays, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. You mentioned Alabama. Now they go ahead and take on this UConn squad where the market has it right now. The Huskies, 11-point favorites in this game. 11.5 even.
We just went back to 11.5 on DraftKings. So
interest coming in on UConn, and how could it not be if you've seen them play over the past month? Total 161.5. We were talking about this before the show started. It's like, how do you step in front of the Huskies? But would you lay that number, because they've been covering all of these types of numbers dating back to last year in the tournament?
I mean, it's UConn or pass for me, honestly. Like, so you mentioned off the top of the show all those numbers that Stormy tweeted out. They're winning by, you know, in this 10 game tournament run going back to last year, they're winning by whatever, 25 points per game, and that the smallest margin of victory is 13. Well, the spread's 11.5. They have to have their smallest margin of victory here if Alabama's gonna cover. Here's some good stuff from Evan Abrams. Action Network tweeted this out. UConn's laying 11.5 versus Alabama in the Final Four. In the last 60 years, 12 teams have closed above minus 11 in the Final Four. Now, that sounds like a lot. 8 of the 12 were UCLA teams in the 60s and early 70s. So let's throw those out. That leaves 4 real games with 11 or more in the Final Four. Those games were 1999. Duke was laying 11.5 against Michigan State. That game landed 6, so the dog covered. 74, NC State was laying 12 to Marquette. That pushed. 95, Kentucky was laying 14 to Syracuse. That was a 9-point game, so the dog covered. And then the recent one we remember was 2021, Gonzaga, UCLA. The number on that game was 14 when Suggs banked the game winner to win by 3. So the dogs in these games, historically speaking, are 3-0-1 against the spread. Do I want to bet the dog? No, because UConn just keeps clobbering people.
Julian, let's talk about Duke, North Carolina State. You know, North Carolina State beats them in the regular season when they're on a four-game losing streak. They lost, what, seven out of the last nine games, North Carolina State. And then all of a sudden they get in this incredible run, and they beat Duke in the championship game, and now they're sitting here playing them again. I mean, where are you on this game, or are you going to take North Carolina State in the points?
I took the 7 points. It feels like too much. It feels like for a combination of reasons. And the obvious one, obviously, these teams know each other well. They're seeing each other again. They've played recently. It feels like it should be a tight game that can stay within seven. So I thought the number was a bit too much. The other thing is Duke's gotten pretty fortunate to, you know, they can be playing well and also be fortunate. It can be both. But you beat two double-digit seeds to get to the Sweet 16. And then against Houston, you know, Shed is everything for that team. He, like, as soon as he – I had nothing on that game. I wanted to watch some of it. As soon as he rolled that ankle and I saw the tweet of him on the scooter, I was like, yeah. Okay, Duke, in game. Houston's just not going to have enough. So credit to Duke for pulling it out, but that's pretty fortunate. And now it seems weird to say, like, okay, now NC State is going to be their test, but it is. I'm just still trying to figure out where this NC State team was all year, because you watch them play. You know, we're using the Cinderella because they're an 11 seed in the Elite Eight or whatever, but they pass the eye test every game. They got legit guard play. They got shooters. They got a big man that everybody's fallen in love with that's got all the moves in the post. They're just kind of like actually a good team that somehow played really poorly throughout the ACC season.
Yeah, no, DJ Burns, if you, everyone who's listening to us and watching us has probably seen him play, but if you have not, I mean, he's absolutely fun.
Mesmerizing.
Excellent passer out of the post, which I think is a very underrated aspect to the post game. You got to be able to be a good passer, and his vision is terrific there. It's a fun game there. But it's interesting, though, this number was 11 when these two teams played 17 days ago on a neutral court in the ACC tournament. Now, obviously, NC State has been upgraded throughout the power ratings, given the fact that they've won 8 elimination games in 18 days, which is kind of wild to say out loud.
Wild.
But, I mean, it's you wonder, it's like, hey, has it been upgraded too much, or how do you feel with this? But I don't know. I think it's an interesting market. We'll obviously talk more about this throughout the rest of the show here. I do want to ask you about the regional final in Detroit, though. Tennessee, Purdue. Now, be careful. Our producer, Elliot, he is a Purdue fan. He grew up in that area.
Jersey.
He's got the Glenn Big Dog Robinson jersey on behind the glass. The Boilermakers, laying 3.5, haven't been back to the Final Four since 1980. 147.5 is our total. Who's going? Is it Rick Barnes or Matt Painter? Who's going to the Final Four?
Yeah, well,
somebody's going. Somebody's going to kill the curse.
Somebody is breaking through, and I do believe it's going to be Purdue. We got them laying 3 on DK Sportsbook right now. It came back from 3.5. I'm cool with laying 3 with Purdue. I just think Tennessee can absolutely give them a game and stay in this game. But Purdue at their best for more stretches, like, it's not like UConn. They're not UConn, but if Purdue is playing their best for longer than Tennessee can sustain, I think this game is, you know, stays within range all game, and then Purdue kind of pulls away. The ED factor is obvious. He's a great player. You're going to need him to have a good game if you're going to win. It's the guard play with Purdue that I think we need to be talking about more. They have 3 really good guards. They can all handle the ball. They can all pass the ball. They can all shoot the ball. They're kind of just like a better version of Creighton, who was right in that game besides the 18-0 run. Creighton has 3 really good guards and a good big man in Kalkbrenner. Purdue just has a much better big man and 3 even better guards. So I think it's a similar test, just a tougher matchup for Tennessee. And I think this time, you know, Purdue's not going to be on the wrong side of an 18-0 run, I don't think, in this game. So I do like the Boilermakers to pull this one out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the keys is going to be, you know, the way that Tennessee is able to go in those spurts and have those runs that they did like they did, you know, in the last game. I mean, when they're shooting, when Connect's going crazy, then all of a sudden. But I think you're right. I think that Purdue can settle it down, because if they go into Eddie, they're going to be able to get points and stop a run.
It's very nice to have a 7'4" center that seems to make all of his little baby hook shots that you can dump it down to, we need to settle down here. That tends to work out pretty nicely for them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, too, with this game is how is it officiated? I mean, a lot was made about the game. These two teams played in Maui. I think Tennessee had, was it 40-something fouls on Purdue and stuff like that? If they don't let them sort of get physical with Purdue.
They certainly played in Boston last night.
They're letting them all play.
If it looks like that.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
They're letting them play in the tourney.
Edie's tough to officiate.
It's good.
Edie's tough to officiate. Like some of these things, I don't know. I don't know if all the refs are handled.
Too.
Yeah, they'll cling it, but I mean, Edie is like the ninth wonder of the world in college basketball. We'll see what happens later on today, but I tend to agree with you. I think I'd lay Purdue or pass. I'm going to wait to watch the game. I want to see how it's officiated first, though, before I dive in, and we'll see with that one. But he is Julian Edlow. Make sure you check him out every Saturday and Sunday on The Sweat here on DraftKings Network, 8 to 10 Eastern time, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. Julian, enjoy the rest of your day here in Vegas, and safe travels
back.
Thanks,
Julian. Appreciate you.
Easy work. I'm just sitting back watching basketball.
I'll be doing that at home. All right, we'll do some good move, bad move, NFL topics next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code TLL when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. This is specifically catered to our VSiN listeners and viewers. You guys asked for it. We delivered. Go check it out. DraftKings Sportsbook. TLL is the promo. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And we'll continue on with our good move or bad move news from around the National Football League.
Wins and Super Bowl wins end up saying, we can't do this anymore. Like, we just can't do this anymore. Like, we can't become a prisoner to our own team. And if somebody else is willing to do it, God bless. But we know Dak's strengths. We know Dak's weaknesses. We know what he brings to the table. And we also know that if he's thrown it over 35 times a game, we're probably not going to win, that we're going to need to have it a different way. And so we need a better team around him, but when he takes all the money, it's hard to have that better team around him. Look, I think the Cowboys overachieved last year. I don't think they underachieved. I think they overachieved. The offensive line didn't play well, right? And I think this is a residual effect of having all this money tied up in five or six players. Again, it worked for the Rams. It did. It worked for the Rams. And maybe it can work for the Cowboys, but the Rams were unique.
And this Dak is heading into year 9, and usually at this point, you kind of fear, you know whether this is the guy that's going to win you a Super Bowl or not. Like, there's no mystery here. We've seen thousands of Dak Prescott games, not literally, but we've seen a lot of Dak Prescott games. And as a fan, I think Dak's a good quarterback. Is he going to ultimately win the Cowboys a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Like, I think I can confidently come to that conclusion there, especially at the price tag that he's playing at. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't see the Jones family doing what Minnesota did, but if I was running the team, I think that's the path that I would go down. I'd say, hey, man, let somebody else go ahead and do it, and let's restart this thing and try to go with a different path forward here to ultimately win a Super Bowl.
You know, I don't disagree with you. I think when you look at his career, is he a good player? There's no question, you know, but he's going to be 31 next year, right? And, you know, we're sitting here saying, when is this all going to change? When are we going to be able to handle what we need to handle? And what is going to make us a better team? Now, you know, last year he had, I know this sounds completely strange because he lost Kellen Moore, the greatest offensive coordinator in the history of football. But last year was his best year in terms of not throwing bad passes. He was only poorly throwing 11.7 of the throws, right? And that was, and last year, 2 years ago, it was 17.3%. The year before that, it was 14%. So he's throwing the ball with more consistency. It was his best on-target percentage season that he ever had. The best at 82.6%. Every other year was at 76. So they found what he does really well, but they need more. They need a, right now they don't have a running back on their team. They need more from him.
And there's now reports that both the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott would be open to a reunion. We'll see if they go down that path there to go ahead and bring Dak's best friend Zeke back to the team. But yeah, I think I don't think you're going to get better of what we saw with Dak Prescott. He was top three in QBR, top three in EPA per play. Like, that's about as good as a season you'll find from Dak Prescott. And what did it get the Cowboys? An embarrassing home playoff loss in the wild card round.
Well, I mean, Dak didn't play defense. In fairness, Dak didn't play defense, though, Femi. I mean, they couldn't stop Green Bay.
Yeah, they got killed.
I mean, that's where it all comes down to. They couldn't stop Green Bay. And that's where the misconception about how talented they are as a team. Yeah, I mean, Parsons is really talented. Lamb's really talented. But they're not as good as they as everybody thinks they are in terms of their overall strength. They need a great draft, and that's always hard to do.
Yep, you're up to bat, Will McClay. Go ahead and do it later on this month. All right, let's get to the next one. NFL owners, they passed the new hybrid kickoff rule at the annual league meeting. This is like similar to the XFL rule there. If you haven't seen it, look it up there. But is this a good move or bad move, this new hybrid kickoff rule, in your opinion?
I don't like it. I think it's too gimmicky. Plus, I think it takes away – Femi, the ability to have the onside kick to gain an extra possession when you need one in a game. You know, when you're playing people in a game, you're going to need an extra possession. So, and now you have to call everybody up and say, hey, we're going to do an onside kick. So why don't you all come up here and I don't like that at all. I like the fact that, you know, New Orleans doesn't beat Indianapolis if they don't get that onside kick. So I think it takes a little bit out of the game.
Yeah, no, I'm open to it because I think we're going to see more returns, but I will miss the surprise onside kick, which you mentioned. Like, now you'll have to kind of wave the white flag saying, hey, onside kick time, and then everybody comes on up there. This next one, the NFL also banned the hip drop tackle at the league meeting. Is this a good move or bad move?
Based on what the players are saying, they don't like it. And based on watching, you know, Scott Novak at his backyard throwing flags, it can only get worse, right? I mean, he's loosening that arm up tremendously to throw more flag. I don't like it. I think to me, if they could explain what they're going to call and how they're going to call it to the players so that the coaches can teach it properly, then you're all for player safety. But there's so much disconnect between what they're showing you and what they end up calling on the field. And if they're not going to replay the call, it's problematic. I think we're going to all say sometime in October that, man, that was a bad call, and we're going to regret this rule because they're overcalling it. And there'll be an adjustment to it, trust me. There'll be an adjustment to it. And this is kind of a thing where I think you've got to make sure, if you're going to call it, you got to make sure you see it. You just can't assume it. And sometimes the more we put into play where they don't see calls but they assume it, then we get into problems.
I mean, officiating feels like it's hard enough as is. Now you got them looking out for this hip drop tackle. I don't know. I get the safety aspect of it here, but also you're kind of trying to make the cigarettes safer. Like, football is a violent game. It's a physical game. Injuries happen. There's only so much you can do. I mean, honestly, this last one here, NFL owners extend the trade deadline to week 9 now, a week, allowing teams to go ahead and make those trades. Good move, bad move?
Well, I think it's a good move because I think it gives teams a chance to say we're not in it. I mean, the reason John Mara said he didn't trade Saquon Barkley last year at the trade deadline was he felt he was still in it. Now, I don't know if he was going to the games, if he could have said that watching the games, but he did, right? Like, there was never a moment when I watched the Giants last year that I felt like they were in it, right? Like, there was just no way. But he did, and so he didn't trade him. Now, will he get a compensatory pick back for him? I would assume so, but they've spent some money too. But I like this move because it allows you to say to your team, look, we're going to make sure we do what we have to do for the future.
Yeah, I guess it gives you an extra week to evaluate the big landscape there with your roster. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, we'll discuss some more NFL coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. Hour number two will be great as well. Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, also dabbles in the college basketball as well, co-host of VSiN Primetime. He'll join us in 30 minutes, get his thoughts on the Elite Eight games today. Maybe we'll squeeze in some association action as well, as we're 2 weeks away from the end of the NBA regular season, then hey, playoffs, that's when it gets real in the association. I can't wait for the NBA playoffs to come up. We'll get some of JVT's thoughts on that here in 30 minutes. But we begin hour number two with the NCAA tournament. Last night, we saw UConn continue in their demolition of the NCAA tournament. That's now on a 2-year, 10-game run. They beat Illinois 77-52, sparked by a 30-0 run. I repeat, 30-0 in the Elite Eight on a run that UConn went on here. Just historic stuff that they're doing here is in their pursuit of a back-to-back national title. They cover all the numbers, 8.5, whatever number you laid with UConn, they covered it. The game goes under the total of 154.5. But we'll start this hour with what's on Michael's mind. And Michael, in your opinion, what makes UConn so great in this pursuit of a second consecutive national title?
Well, I think they play a game that they're rising their play to a standard, not just hoping to win the game. The opponent is insignificant to UConn. It really is. They have a standard of excellence that Hurley has set. And I love what Hurley said after the game. This is what's been on my mind. Because we live in this world where everybody's got to go to Dairy Queen. Everybody's got to coach nice. Don't yell at the players. Everybody's great. Well, the job of a leader is to push people where they don't think they should go or could go. That's a leader, right? Because we all, as human beings, often want to take the path of least resistance. We have a tendency to be lazy. We have a tendency to not push ourselves. We don't know how far we could go. And a great leader teaches us where we can go. And Hurley said after the game, I really don't care what people necessarily think of my intensity or my passion. It obviously shows up the right way with my team. We don't cheat. We don't lie. I think we're all about the right things. It's just at times that I'm an a-hole, which is true, which is what sometimes great leaders have to be, because you have to confront people when they're not doing what you need them to do. And your messaging translates. And the greatest thing a leader can show you is the team represents who he is. And UConn is clearly an extension of Dan Hurley. They listen to him and they hear him. They don't tune him out. You don't see their huddles where guys are looking somewhere else. You don't see their huddles where guys aren't playing with intensity. You see the players within the culture coaching their own culture. And to me, that's excellence. That's something that's we should marvel at. I don't know why we would want to destroy this. Like, I don't know why we would want to tear down somebody who's bringing out the best in these players. Because even if they don't make it to pro basketball, this experience at UConn, learning how to push your limits, is going to allow you to become a better person in your community, a better husband, a better father, a better everything. There is residual effects to his teaching. You know, look at all the people that played for Lombardi in the 60s about how they say he influenced them every day and the perception, well, he was too hard on them. Well, I think if you talk to any of those players, there were moments he was hard. There were moments he was soft. It's all about leadership. And we tend to highlight the negativity, which is completely wrong. And I think Hurley should be commended for his willingness to go against the grain. Because, Sammy, we've heard this so many times. You can't coach kids like that today. For them to do that. You know, I didn't think they had it. I thought they were more of a front-running team. But when they got down by 13, they showed resolve. They showed mental toughness. That's what you want with your team. That's what you want to try to extend to, because you're not coaching for today. You're coaching for a lifetime. You're teaching lifetime things that will help the people that you're leading come become better people in the community. And I think we tend to want to play this off as you're being too harsh. Well, maybe, but have you won anything?
Are you seeing that kind of leave the NFL? Because this past coaching cycle I thought was really eye-opening, to where you have a 6-time Super Bowl champion in Bill Belichick, have only one interview reportedly with the Atlanta Falcons. Mike Vrabel goes without a job. He's now a consultant in the Cleveland Browns. Like, some of these coaches, like the whole, I guess, theme of the coaching cycle and general manager cycle was collaborative. We want everyone to work together.
Yeah.
And it feels like the quote-unquote dictator is what at least is being painted on the outside is sort of being pushed to the side. The people who push guys a little bit too hard are being pushed to the side because, like you mentioned, you quote-unquote can't coach that way in 2024. Is that what some of these NFL franchises are missing? And maybe they could learn from a Dan Hurley and what he's built at UConn with his program.
You know, I don't think it's about the dictator. It's about the culture builder. I think they're trying to avoid it. We saw, you know, the Chargers have spent a lot of time trying to avoid the culture builder, right? They've got all these talented players, but they can't win anything. So they finally hired a culture builder. And I think there's been a resistance towards culture builders, not towards dictators, towards culture builders, because it takes a lot. You have to give up yourself to be willing to conform to the culture. And that's partly the owner, that's the general manager, that's everybody. Like, you just, the culture doesn't exist just for the team, it exists for everybody. And if you're not willing to, why are the Jets, why will they always struggle? Because they have no culture. They've never built a culture. They don't even understand culture. They think it's about adding this piece or that piece, or we'll get this player in, when there's not a foundation to win with culture. And I think that's what's happening in the league. You know, the league, all the most in the analytical community don't even acknowledge that momentum exists. Don't even acknowledge that momentum exists. So if you don't think momentum exists, how do you even believe in culture? How do you even believe in culture? How do you create a sense of belonging, which is what teams are all about? The ability to bring people together for a greater cause than yourself. You have to create a sense of belonging. If you don't have that, you can't win. And championships don't win on talent. They win on talent working together.
And I think back to my time in Seattle covering the Seahawks, and like I still remember a lot of fans were saying Russell Wilson is being held back by Pete Carroll. And I'm like, hey, guys, like Pete Carroll is awesome at what he does, and he's really good at building cultures. And just because we can't see it, because we can't quantify it, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist or it doesn't matter. And I think that's sort of the disconnect that you sometimes get between the analytical community and some of the people that are actually in the buildings there, because hey, sometimes like just because you can't put something on a chart doesn't mean that it doesn't matter, as we've seen oftentimes in the past with the NFL and with all sports there. Culture is what matters most. We'll talk more NFL on the other side here. We're just getting started here on hour number two. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. You get the number of tickets, where the money doesn't match the public opinion, all that valuable information. Once again, take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and joining us now here on the Progressive Guest Line, Jonathan Von Tobel, host of VSiN Primetime. Check that out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern Time. Also our senior NBA analyst. We'll get to some association a little bit later, but JVT, good morning. Thanks for joining us. We'll start with the NCAA tournament. Last night, I mean, we saw UConn just demolish Illinois 30-0 run. They ultimately win the game by 25 after shooting 17% from three-point range. They're now taking on Alabama in the Final Four. Does Alabama have the makeup to stay competitive with UConn? We'll have all week to break that game down, but I want to get your early thoughts. Do the Crimson Tide have the makeup to stay within that number of 11.5 over at DraftKings?
I mean, I would say, Femi, the short answer is yes, only because if you have the ability to shoot like Alabama does and score and play with that kind of pace, you're going to have the ability to do that. And, you know, anything is possible. And it's funny how we're talking like in that tone, right, considering that this is basketball, but UConn has looked that good. But I would say, like, generally, yes. The problem, though, is that, again, when you look at Alabama, what have we talked about, guys, all year long? It's the defense. And when you look at so many different things, you don't force turnovers, 291st in the country enforcing turnovers. When you're an underdog, you got to be able to steal possessions. You're not going to do that here. You're probably not going to be able to get second chance opportunities against the best rebounding team in the country in UConn, who was absolutely great, had 37 defensive rebounds yesterday. And keep them off the offensive glass? Probably not. So, like, when you look at just so many different things, by the way, 311th in the country in terms of defensive foul rate, Alabama. So are you going to be able to defend without fouling and putting them on the free throw line? So I would say, Femi, like, if you come out and they just start scorching the nets and they're hitting every single shot, which is certainly possible, I think that absolutely they can stay within this number. The problem is that's what you're asking Alabama to do. And I think that's it. Like, when you look at UConn, they're so sound in every single facet of their game that generally when there is a weakness, they will pick on that weakness of their opponents and they will go after it every single time. And considering how high this rating is, I'll say it. I find it hard to try to get in front of this train net right now with the UConn Huskies. I just don't want to do it.
You know, NC State and Duke played twice, and NC State is kind of the most confusing team. They lost 7 of the last 9 games, and then all of a sudden they got hot. They got a big man in the middle. They beat Duke soundly in the ACC tournament after losing, what, by 15 to them. I mean, it's 7. Is the line too much, JVT, or are you going to back Duke in this one?
You know, if we're going by just pure like market ratings, Michael, the argument here is that this is a cheap number for Duke. And this is why, you know, on Friday night when we saw those results come in and you see those numbers pop up and you see everything, like you see the Duke starts to rise here a little bit. And I think that's the case. Let's go back to Michael. You mentioned the ACC tournament in which NC State won that game. On a neutral, you're talking about Duke as an 11-point favorite. When they played at NC State, Duke was a 6.5-point favorite. And yet here we are now on a neutral in a rematch, and you're just talking about 7. So like from a pure number standpoint, there is value here on Duke, which is why you saw that 6 go from 7 almost immediately. And I would say that's the case. Look, NC State's playing extremely well. They're obviously red hot. You guys mentioned DJ Burns with his vending machines. I don't know if you saw that story, but he's got a massive, like, I guess, a glut of vending machines around that area of the country. The kid's absolutely tremendous. But I think when you look at the ability of what Duke can be defensively in this matchup and the fact that the market has swung this far in just a matter of a week or two, guys, like this was a neutral site matchup of 11 points and now we're laying 7. And I think sometimes, Michael, I readily admit it's probably a short-sighted nature of mine when you're talking about just going by market ratings and numbers and saying, well, there's some value here, and you kind of ignore recent form. But I think that would be the case here. I think the market has gotten this right and driving this up from 6 to 7. Just from a number standpoint right now, I think there is value in coming in and betting the Duke Blue Devils here.
Duke laying that 7 right now, the total sitting at 143. That will be the final game today here in Dallas in the Elite Eight. We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel here on the Progressive Guest Line. JVT, host of VSiN Primetime. Once again, check it out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern time. Also our senior NBA analyst. Well, let's talk about, in my opinion, the main event. I know it's the matinee, but this is the main event because this is, I mean, someone's got to go to the Final Four. Rick Barnes or Matt Painter here. The Boilermakers, 3-point favorites, total 147.5 here. A little bit of interest on the Volunteers this morning. All the 3.5s are pretty much gone here. Do you agree with that move, or is Purdue being a little bit undervalued?
Look, I mean, I think they're being undervalued. I had them in that matchup against Gonzaga. It was one of the first bets I had made that Sunday prior after watching them dismantle Utah State. I think Purdue has kind of figured this thing out, and their guards have gotten better. But you watch the way that they play. Like, you throw two or three. You throw three bodies at Zach Edey. He's so big. He's so tall, obviously. With his ability, he's gotten, I think, better as a passer out of the post as well, Femi. So when he attracts some of those double teams, he knows where to find his guys. They are such a good shooting team, literally the best shooting team in the country at just over 40% as a squad. So when you start to bring doubles, they can swing that thing around, find an open shooter, and make teams really pay. I think the market has kind of slept on Purdue a little bit here, at least in the NCAA tournament. You know, guys, and rightfully so, right? Because this run extends for UConn going back to the last NCAA tournament. But there's another team that's quietly covering by double digits in every single one of their NCAA tournament games, too. And that's Purdue. And they've done it, too, against some competition that a lot of people thought were going to be pretty live. A lot of people were getting in on Gonzaga before that game started against Purdue. That thing was a sleeper in the second half. Purdue looked absolutely incredible. I've really come around on them, guys. Like, ever since watching that matchup against Utah State, betting them against Gonzaga, and seeing them go forward, I think that there's a lot you can do here. You're a better shooting team than Tennessee. I think that you can actually come in here and win this by margin. So I laid 3 with Purdue. Rode them in the last game, and I think I'm going to do it here. I've been wildly impressed with what they've been able to do so far.
JVT, what the first time they played back in November before Thanksgiving, Purdue was a 4-point winner in a tournament game on a neutral court. How much difference is there between that game and this game?
I think it's pretty big, Michael, in that obviously, like, teams improve, they change, and I think Purdue's just gotten better since that time, right? I mean, this is a team that, as we expected coming into this year, was going to be better because their backcourt was not as veteran-laden, right? They weren't really prepared for an NCAA tournament, but now they've got some more games under their belt, and that was a good litmus test here when you talk about what that's been and this run up to this point right now. So I think that's it. It's how much have these teams improved over that span, and you could totally make the argument Tennessee has as well, especially on the defensive end. Tennessee's fantastic, but I think when you look at the way those two teams matched up and what happened in the previous matchups, Michael, one of the things that I think will transpire a little bit differently, Purdue in that match was just 4-15 for